Hello and welcome to Accounted For, the IRIS Interviews podcast. I'm Emma Crawford-Falicone, Divisional Director for Accountancy here at IRIS Software Group. And today I'm delighted to welcome our guest speaker, Jonathan Mackie, Director for NRB Chartered Accountants. Jonathan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name's Jonathan Mackie. I'm a Director of NRB Chartered Accountants, and I primarily wear two hats over here at NRB. So I'm also the staff partner, and I'm also the digital partner. My day-to-day job deals with recruitment, staffing, grievances, everything else that comes with the staff side. But I'm also looking into what the future of the accounting profession will look like using AI, using automation, using bots and everything else that comes with it. Hopefully it'll be an interesting conversation.
Now, let me set the scene a little bit. Some may argue that the new generation of workers put up with very little. In a candidates-driven market, there's no room for poor management or uninspiring workplaces. This is a particular challenge for the accountancy industry. If you can find a suitable candidate, you may not even be able to keep them. So with this in mind, innovative accountancy firms such as NRB are rethinking the resources they need and are looking elsewhere for talent. Some are even recruiting business advisors now. During this podcast, we'll be exploring how this movement has come about and how these firms are setting themselves up for success. So let's kickstart the conversation. The industry is suffering from a talent shortage. There's no ifs or buts. Over a third of accountants are considering leaving the profession in the next 5 years. And worryingly, that includes 30% of under 25s. So Jonathan, I guess my opening question to you is, what do you think are the main reasons behind this?
It's split into two for me, and we'll concentrate on the younger generation first. It's where you're coming back to. It's that we're not just competing with other accounting practices anymore. You know, we're competing with the likes of Google and Facebook and all the innovative places where people can work and want to work. Being an old-fashioned traditional accountancy firm doesn't sit very well with the modern generation. They're looking for values. They're looking for efficiency, modern ways of working, flexible working, and everything else that comes with that. Likewise, similarly for the older generation, the new wave of tech that's coming through, the introduction of potentially AI and everything that's going to follow with that. It's a journey that you're going to have to start now and start getting comfortable with and moving along a reasonable pace. And it's whether people are willing to put the time and effort in to get on that journey, or whether it's the right time now to think, you know, I've had my time here. There's a new wave coming through. It might be my time to get off the bus and find something a bit, you know, more suited to what I want to do with life. It comes back to everyone having more choices in life than having to stick with it just because that's what you have to do. It's a lot more free nowadays.
I love that you've looked at it from that angle as well, because I just think, you know, gone are the days where we have 30, 40 year careers in one business, in one profession, in one industry. I'm an escaped accountant myself, but I think from being on both sides of the fence, as an industry and as a profession, we're really recognising that the skills that our people have are really transferable across multiple different industries. So with that in mind, what practical steps do you think a firm can take to retain their existing talent, but also to attract new talent?
There used to be a very old-fashioned link between input and output. If you sat at the desk for 8 hours a day, you knew what fees that you were going to generate in that period because you charged by the hour generally, or you knew you could get through this many sets of accounts in that period of time and everything else like that. But slowly but surely, that link has been eroded to a degree, so it's less and less. And in the next couple of years, that link is going to be shattered, if not shattered already with the advent of AI and implementing automation within your companies. Coming back to sort of like, what can you retain existing talent and attracting new talent, is understanding that you don't need people to be sat at the desks 8 hours a day to get the same level of fees or to look after the same number of clients or to give such great service. Some people who have fully bought into the digital journey and everything that's coming in the future might be able to do that same job in 4 hours. It then comes back to, what do you want to do with that additional time that you've got? Do you go back to the old ways and say, right, okay, well, you've got another 4 hours, so you can do twice the number of fees then? Or do you invest that time in other things? Of, you know, everyone's got external hobbies and other interests. Can you invest that and bring that into the business somehow? You know, go out marketing in that industry? Can you go and find new clients in that industry? Can you go and do some well-being sessions? Can you raise the profile of the business? Can you improve your skill set one way or other? It becomes an investment of time now as opposed to an investment of money. And for me, the ways to retain existing talent, to attract the new ones, is to make your business stand out with the fact that you're not money driven, you're time driven, and you know, you don't have to pay the most in the sector or competing businesses around you. What you have to do is offer people a proper place to work where they feel that they are part of the team and that their work-life balance matters to you as much as it does to them.
I love that as well. And it also then, use the terminology then, freedom, gives them the freedom to be able to manage their own time, manage their own outputs, regardless of the inputs, as long as they get any outputs, that's what's being incentivized. Let's call it old-fashioned terminology. It's empowering them, right? It's actually allowing them to be, I guess, in charge of what they're delivering rather than going through a structure, being very restricted. And therefore, also, you're going against trying to encourage that growth mindset, and you're encouraging a lack of innovation by keeping people in that structure. So I think it's a win-win all round.
And it's being comfortable with yourself as a firm that you're not going to get every candidate wanting to come through the door because your values don't fit with theirs. But the ones that do fit with yours and become part of the team or the family will stay with you for a long period of time.
You mentioned there, Jonathan, values and how important values are. How do you go about creating your values at NRB, and how do you make them relevant? Or how do you keep them relevant, more to the point, actually? Because we've all been there, right? We've all said, okay, here's six buzzwords that we're going to use and we're going to put them on the wall and we're never going to refer to them. What do you do different at NRB that actually retains and attracts talent?
About 2 years ago, we had some external coaches come in and we were going to do a session on our values and how we can implement them and everything else like that. And they started the session off by putting up our values that were on the website at the time, faced away on the window, and told us to guess what the six values were. The highest anyone scored was 2 out of 6. And that's at board level. So if you're 2 out of 6 at board level aren't living and breathing those values, they're not your values. And if you go through some of the values, they were what you expect of accountants, technical excellence. That's not a value. That's what you should be doing as a bare minimum. And we spent that session actually going through what our values should be and how we determine them. So they went through a process of, like you say, using buzzwords. They had some cards with some buzzwords on them and what they sort of meant. And we went through and selected what we thought were about right. We then went and asked all our staff, there's a quick survey, walking around, give us 3 words that describe us and how we do things and things like that. So we incorporated our staff into that because the staff are the key part of those values as well. You might be driven by the board, but they need to continue throughout the whole team. So we went and got their involvement. And what we ended up with was 3 that we're living and breathing on a daily basis and 3 that we're definitely working towards and we all want to do. So they will naturally become inherent within our culture of what we do. But what we try to do with them is then incorporate them into our conversations. So if I'm having a difficult conversation with somebody and it's a bit of a subjective thing, you know, they've been sat on the phone and it just feels like they're not committed or something else like that, then one of our values is commitment. So I can have that conversation around it now of, you on your phone there, how does that show commitment to us as a firm? And me not calling you out on it, how does that show me not show commitment to you? So it's just having that conversation. We've now got 6 guide rails and the question's always with them. How is what you've done fit that value? They should be able to answer it. And if they can't, and if they keep consistently falling outside of our values, then this isn't the firm for them.
To your point, it gives you those guardrails. It's almost like a scorecard as well that then actually filters through everything that you're doing, whether that's internal and external, right? Because of those values have to be represented in your client-facing conversations as well. So it makes so much sense. So Jonathan, look, the sector, as we have kind of alluded to before, it's undergoing a major transition to match structural and economic changes in the wider world. And that has resulted in this skills gap. So I want to get into a bit more of a tactical conversation now with you. So if we were to start with experienced accountants, what type of skills do you think they're lacking to be successful in this changing environment? And why do you think they might be reluctant to change, and how can we support them?
The experienced accountant comes with a lot of strength, being, you know, they know the clients, they've lived through issues, they know how to get around it, from a technical point of view with legislation, but also the softer skills of explaining that situation in layman's terms to a human being. They know how to interpret management accounts much better. But once you get to a position where you've got all that wealth of knowledge, and it comes with anything in life, once you've built up something, you're always scared of losing it, and you're always scared of change. And, you know, if I do this, does that expose me because I'm now starting from ground zero again, as opposed to I'm in my comfort zone with all this knowledge, and if anything comes at me, I know I can deal with it, as opposed to start venturing into new areas, for example, technology, AI, automation, everything else that comes along with that. It's starting again from ground zero, and you're starting again with the rest of the pack. You're not the expert in the field, and you're not experienced. So it's overcoming that. It's overcoming the fact that you're not the expert anymore. You soon will be, because you've got that wealth of knowledge and everything else that you've ever done, and you'll apply it to it, and you'll come up with a different solution that somebody who's not got that knowledge and experience for. But the vast majority of it is I think it's the scariness of change, the unknown of the unknown. And to support them, I think it's almost experience it, understand that change can be good. Unfortunately, understand that this change is happening and will happen in the industry and the world. And there's not a huge amount that we can do about that, because once AI is out of the box, which it is, and all the development that's going on, it's not going back in the box, unfortunately. And that link between input and output is going to be shattered, especially from a compliance point of view. So if you can be using that technology to streamline, make more efficient, innovate your compliance side of stuff, what you'll actually find is what's left over of the industry, the accounting profession, is value-added services, which taps straight back into the skill set that you've been developing over the last 20, 25, 30, whatever the number of years is. So yes, it's starting off and it's fresh and it's new, but the benefits that come off the back of it takes you right back to the skill set that you've built up over the number of years.
I just want to dig a little bit deeper into that, Jonathan, if that's okay. Do you think that there is a significant, notable, measurable change in maybe the ratio between those staff that are more experienced versus less experienced staff in firms overall now? Or do you think it's always been that way? We're just facing different challenges with the same ratio?
I think it's mostly always been that way, because, you know, a lot of accounting firms, let's be honest, have always, they're generally long lasting. You'll get the odd one or two that will come through. They'll get potentially private equity funding. They'll have a quick flourish. But your long-standing ones that are in your town centres that have been there for 50 years, 75 years, you know, 100 years or whatever. We're in our 75th birthday. So there must have been some transition. You know, we've not still got the founding partners here. So there will naturally always be a transition, and that transition involves bringing younger generations through. Otherwise, you're still at the same point of, you've still got the same aged board, regardless of. So you need to bring the younger generation through. I think that's always been the case. So I just think it's new challenges in the market. And I think, you know, it goes back to, and I'm sure people can potentially think back to, things coming out that were new pieces of kit, new pieces of tools, new technological advancements. And I'm not talking, you know, it has to be a computer side of it. A piece of technology could be anything, and I'm not slating anyone for this, and I don't think anyone's alive when it happened, but going from an abacus to a calculator, for example, is a change in technology. It doesn't have to mean that it's a new piece of computer kit, if that makes sense. So it's that side of it for me, is that it's, we've always had that. It's just a brand new challenge that's coming through, and we potentially need to understand that the younger generation might be better equipped to deal with some of the challenges that come with it, but they don't have the experience and skill set that the more experienced accountant has. So it's got to be a hybrid between the two.
Yeah, and actually as well, thinking about what you said there, I also quite often think about those people with more experience are actually going to be in some ways used to having more regular changes when it might come to methodology and regulations, etc. They're used to having to change, maybe more so than some of the less experienced people who have learnt one way and they're just going through their first few years of getting used to these rules and regulation changes as well. So let's move on to that newer generation coming through the ranks. What skills do you think they maybe struggle with? How can they be supported?
I still pretend to think that I'm part of the newer generation, but I need to accept that I'm not anymore. I dropped the word Filofax in the office the other day and I had quite a few people turn around looking at me saying, what's he on about? So I'm not the younger generation anymore, unfortunately, as much as I'd love to. But I think some of the criticism that's potentially labelled, you know, around the Gen Zs and things like that, around the softer skills, I personally had labelled against me when I was coming through. And I think it's more of a dynamic between two generations, or, you know, with a, potentially have a gap or two in between, meeting in a workplace that causes this, I don't know, friction. I'm quite certain some of the more experienced accountants, when they came through, would have been argued that they didn't have any softer skills. I think it's a bit of an unfair criticism, but it's something you learn over time, and it's something that you've got to invest in to get those skill sets. But it goes back to, again, is that for me, it's that disconnect, and it's learning those skills over a period of time. But when we've got that link broken between input and output that we've talked about previously, invest your time then. But the other side of it for me as well is with the younger generations, they're more accustomed to instant gratification. We've now got a society where previously, if you wanted to you know, go and get some milk or anything else like that, you know, your local groceries, on a Sunday it was shut. We then got supermarkets that stayed open all the time. We've now gone that step further where we've got Amazon, where you can go on 24 hours a day and have it shipped, delivered the next day for you. So we're in a generation, you know, not just as a society, as everything, as a generation now, where everything is almost instant gratification. You know, Klarna, pay now opportunities is buy it now and you can pay with that later on. So it all comes back to that instant gratification side of it, which comes back to, again, is that when you're talking about potentially the younger generation looking to move on and things like that, is that they've got that built into them that, why do I have to wait to find the place that's right for me? Why do I have to stick it out for 6 to 12 months to see if it is right for me? I've been brought up and I've got a generation now that's got this instant gratification. So if the values don't fit, I'll go and find somewhere else that does.
But at the end of the day, if there's tech out there that can offer instant results, why aren't we using it for the greater good of everyone involved?
You know, just to jump in on that instant gratification and that change that's happened very recently is we're an Iris customer. We use Iris OpenSpace. Every single one of our letters, I'm going to say 4 or 5 years ago, went out in the post. It'd take 2 days to arrive at a client. The client then would review it. They'd send it back, and we're nearly a week later. Nowadays, I upload it to OpenSpace in 5-10 minutes. Client gets an email to say they review it, and they send it back. So it's everywhere, that instant change in society where it's that gratification or the nothing takes that long anymore. The younger generation generally have technology and they're more comfortable texting than they are on phone calls and things like that. And it's a combination between the two to get both or all generations talking to each other is that, yes, the younger generation have to come out and be more comfortable doing what they do and come out of their comfort zone. But potentially the more experienced ones have to come out of their comfort zone and use the technology that the younger generations are more comfortable with using. It's just as with anything, it's a relationship between two people, two groups of people, a firm, and you've just got to find what works for you.
We always have this third side to our triangle, right, which is our client. And it goes the same. Our clients are changing. Our clients are evolving. We're getting more of the younger generation becoming business owners that made them, you know, become our clients. That some with larger businesses that some of our more experienced staff need to be managing that relationship. I want to shift gears slightly, and I want to talk a little bit about AI, Jonathan. How do you think investment in tech such as AI can help ease the strain of the talent gap?
So I suppose the easiest way for me is that AI will, as I've said a number of times now, once it's embedded and once people are comfortable with it, will shatter that link between input and output. it then goes back to, what do you do with your time then? Do you chain people to the desk so they now do twice the number of fees, or three times the number of fees, or four times the number of fees? Or do you rein it back and have more social events? Do you have more investment? Do you have more networking? Do you spend them going out and do more selling? Do you give them a better work-life balance? It all comes back to that for me, is accepting that there's now an investment of time that's going to come off the back of the investment into the AI. And if you think the answer to the investment of time is just to get your people to work more, I don't think you'll have a huge amount sticking around. If you think it's, you know, yes, work a bit more so we can grow our fees because now we're more efficient, but let's say 10% of the extra time goes into working more, and then the rest of the time then gets spent on other things. That's then when you get a workforce that wants to stay with you, that are invested in you as a company, and, you know, will attract people who are that like-minded. And that's not to say they're lazy. That's not to say anything else like that. The one way I describe myself is driven and lazy, because what I'll do is I'll find the shortest way of doing it, but I'll make sure it gets done. So rather than doing something the way that it's always been and looking at, I always use this spreadsheet this way and it takes me 3 hours to fill it in. Right, well, I'll invest a bit of time, and if I can take me 4 hours to find a way to streamline it, but I can do it in an hour now, brilliant, I've saved 2 hours every time I use that spreadsheet going forward. And that comes back to being lazy, because I don't want to spend 3 hours doing the same boring process that I've done every time. But it comes back to, again, touching on that, the driven side of it, because I want to get it done. So my work still gets done, I just change what I do. Do I get that signed off, or did I get that signed off by a manager when I was doing that non-chargeable work to streamline my? No. Did they see the benefit of it once it was done? Yes. Should I have mostly told them? Most probably. But that, for me, is what comes off the strain of the talent gap. A, gives you staff that time back, but it also gives you as a firm that time back. And it's up to you what you want to do with it.
So I do want to just, redirect the conversation again and look at alternative ways that firms can tackle the talent gap. And one of those other ways is outsourcing. But what are the benefits of outsourcing, and what advice would you give to firms considering this as a solution?
So it comes back to, again, for me, it's an investment, as AI is. It's going to invest. This one's maybe more of a slightly financial one. But what it frees you up is your time, again. Because the way I see AI or automation or anything else like that is the fact that I start a process, leave it to run, I go and do something else, and I come back and it's finished. So however long that process takes, or whatever it does or anything else like that, for me sat here, I've only seen it start and then finish. So that whole process to me has taken, of my time, a minute. Might have taken a day or two for the process to complete in the background or anything else like that, but of my time, it's a minute, not a day. So I always gave this explanation of when I first started implementing the old receipt bank, now Dex, preparing to into companies. Because they'd sit there and scan it in and upload it, and then they'd sit for it all to wait and process. And they're like, well, I may as well have typed this all in. I was like, yeah, but you're missing the point. If you just forwarded them on, gone and done something else while they were processing, and then come back, you've been 100% productive in that period doing other things, and that bit where you were keying it in before has now been done. So it goes back to that, is understanding what's a thing of your time and what's the some other thing or somebody else's time that's being used. And that's the bit, again, where outsourcing, for me, does that. It gives you that opportunity to say, I'm going to start this process. I'm going to hand it over to Iris Outsourcing. They're going to go through all that workflow and everything else that we've described, and I'll get back a fully finished product that I would have done to the same standard that I wanted, but it's now taken me a minute as opposed to taking 4 or 5 hours to do, because I've used Iris Outsourcing for that. That gives me then the option of what I do with my time. I'm back to, what do I invest my time in? And you're right, it's not a one size fits all. There might be certain things that outsourcing will fit absolutely perfectly for, AI for another thing. It all comes back to each and every business and understanding what they want to do as a firm, as owners, to understand which route they go down or which routes they go down.
I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of accounting and bookkeeping firms across multiple countries, and I struggle to think back of any one of them who has just taken one direction and solely followed that one direction, whether it's, 100% all in on tech, whether it's 100% all in outsourcing, whether it's 100% all in generating and growing internal talent. All of the successful companies that I've worked with do a little bit of all of it, and also are flexible with it. So they don't say, okay, I'm going to do outsource this service line, and the reason for it is X, Y, Z. They regularly review as well, and they pivot where they need to. So I think the key is to really make sure that we are being flexible and adaptable in our approach, and not just, I guess, pigeonholing ourselves into one solution to fix our talent gap worries.
100%, yeah, it comes back to is that 100% flexibility. We plan our staff intake. We generally only take a college or university leavers, and we plan that 12 to 18 months out, and then we're looking for 4 or 5 years into the future because that's how long it takes to come through. As we all know, in 4 or 5 years, life happens. Somebody might move to a different city. The boyfriend might go somewhere else. The girlfriend, whatever it is, life changes. So where we've got that well laid out plan for the next 4 to 5 years, that can be scuppered at any point in time. And as you're internally generating your staff, that's how long it takes. So you can't just sit there and go, oh, well, back to square one now. We'll have to start reinventing back 2 years because we're all 2 years along that journey. You've got to continuously, A, look at your staffing to make sure you're right going forward. But also, B, yeah, if somebody leaves, right, okay, can we, there's a gap that's now created. Do we go and recruit externally and run a, what's the odds of that? 50-50 chance of getting a successful candidate that'll maintain and stay with you, whether he's as good as the other guy, the person who's left or anything else like that. Or to go and supplement that with outsourcing for 12 to 18 months while we reassess our plans along them building with AI and technology.
Last question now, Jonathan. What's your one piece of advice to firms tackling the talent shortage?
I suppose the easiest for me is understanding that the link between input and outputs have gone or is very quickly going, and understanding what you want to be as a business. Yes, A, understanding what your values are, and that'll help attract the talent and things like that. But that's, as we've just said, that's one of potentially three, if not more, routes. And having staff might not be your idea of fun. So you might want to scrap that route completely. And then does values really matter as long as you're attracting the right type of client or doing that type of work? It's understanding what you want to do with your business, how you want to do it, and then looking what's out there on the market to generate that. So is it staff internally generated? Is it using technology and automating everything that you do? Is it using outsourcing to help supplement growth or free up some more time for you as a business owner? It's understanding you and what you want to then implement that within your business and use the tools that are readily available through Iris outsourcing, through AI, through staff to help you achieve what you want to get.
Amazing. So, thank you everyone for listening. We hope you found this session insightful. There are many other podcasts in our Accounted For series from Iris, so please have a browse and don't forget to subscribe. A huge thank you for Jonathan for joining us today, and see you next time.